In Hebrews, we're looking at faith, the life of faith, the model of faith of those patriarchs of faith in the Old Testament, those examples that actually we can follow. These things are written for our benefit so that we can gain insight into our own lives. Because, you know, when we wake up in the morning, how do we live our lives? How do we walk? How do we see God's power working in a practical way? That's why we get together. How does this Bible, this ancient book, apply to our lives today in a real, tangible way? To me, that's one of the most exciting feedbacks, whether it's someone listening on the radio to the program, Bridging the Gap, someone tuning in to our live services on the internet, or listening to the live services on the radio. For those of you coming, and you've been here for some time, you've remarked in many times just how alive the Bible has become as we just go through it verse by verse and make not spectacular observations, just practical observations here, how we can apply. And life-changing it is. So that's exciting. And so we're going to look particularly at Abraham today. We left off in verse 8. Let's take a look. And we can especially relate to Abraham because the Bible tells us that all of us who believe in the Lord Jesus really, in a sense, are children of Abraham, who is called the father of faith. Let's take a look. Verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, and the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child. And when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised, therefore from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. You know, it's a tremendous picture here of Abraham. And Jesus, essentially, relating to the Pharisees, said something. He said, you know, if you were Abraham's children, you do the deeds. You do the work of Abraham. There in John chapter 8, verse 39. And then he warned the Pharisees, you're actually of your father, the devil, not Abraham. Your father is the devil because you're doing the works of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning. And he saw these people who wanted to kill him simply because of who he was. More and more, you've got to understand, as you live in this world, there is an ancient hostility against God, which is transmitted to the people of God, both Jews, whom the Lord has promised his everlasting covenant to Abraham and is going to complete that, as he said, literally, and to those of us who are Gentiles who have been grafted into the promise of the Messiah, receive new life. Both of those entities, more and more, you're going to see hostility increase. And we shouldn't be surprised. We shouldn't be shocked. Jesus said, if they hate you, know this. They hated me before they hated you. It's not personal. It's really a spiritual battle. That explains a lot of the persecution among Christians, so much so that in the last 100 years, more Christians have died for their faith than in the 19 centuries before combined, including the Inquisition period, including the Roman persecution. That's how devastating right now around the world. But I believe we're getting closer and closer to the time of the end as we move in this direction. So we live in this world, and Abraham is a great example. How do we live in this world? Abraham showed us the simple response of faith to the Lord. And our relationship to him in many ways is the same, because as he was called out of Ur the Chaldees, he was called out of the civilization of man to a place where God would show him no details, just trust me. In a way, that's a type of you being called out of the world. And you went on this adventure, this journey, with your Father in heaven, who's not given you all the details. Wouldn't you like more details? I know I would. But I always wrestle with that. He tells me to walk by faith and not by sight. I've got to trust him. And so that's where we are. So Abraham went out. That's the first point. He was called to go out, and guess what? It says here in verse 8, he went out. He went out, not knowing where he was going. He went out, first of all. Stephen, in his message After Peter had preached, of course, Stephen, you know, responded. He was one of the deacons, but he was just moved in the Spirit to preach. And in chapter 7 of Acts, he preaches, and it's an amazing passage because he actually goes through the history of Israel, showing how at each juncture when God tried to communicate to them, they stubbornly resisted it. And Abraham actually, believe it or not, though he is a model of faith, you will be greatly encouraged because he wasn't a perfect model of faith. He had his issues. He wavered not in the thing that God had given to him ultimately, but he wavered in a number of things the Lord had showed him. In fact, when the Lord told him to go out, let's turn to Genesis chapter 12 so we can pick up the story as it was given and then make some comparisons here. Genesis chapter 12. Here's the record of it. Now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. Unconditional promise, just that he was going to be blessed. I'll make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I'll bless those who bless you, and I'll curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So the people the Lord established to come out from Ur of the Chaldees to establish a nation through Abraham, the intention was first he would supernaturally protect them, and second, that they would be a blessing to all nations. So Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken him, and Lot went with him. Now right there you already get a hint, something wasn't quite right. Because Abraham was told to get out from his family and his security and what he trusted in, to go out. And we learn from the previous chapter, because essentially he's kind of recapping it in verse 31. It says, Terah took his son Abram. So Abram let his father lead the way. And his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, and his son Abram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go to a land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Well, we find and discover that after Terah died is when God spoke to him again and said, now go to the place I'm going to show you. So in a sense, Abraham stopped short of the goal. He didn't respond perfectly. In fact, that's essentially what Stephen mentions in Acts 7, verse 4, that he dwelt there, and when his father was dead, then he moved him to the land. You know, that's a great illustration for us. We've been called to trust the Lord. And, you know, I got to tell you, myself and you, we don't get it perfectly, you know. Oh, that we would. The things we miss out on because we don't trust the Lord. The hindrance we put in the Lord's way of wanting to bless us beyond what we can imagine. But we struggle with that. And Abraham's a great illustration. But his failures were costly just like ours are. We learn in this God is faithful and eventually brought him around to it. But he had his issues. And of course later, you know, when he got into the land and famine came, what did he do? He went down to Egypt. What do we do oftentimes when we don't sense God's working in our lives? You know, Lord, I've been praying. Nothing's happening. What's going on in my life? I don't sense your presence anymore. I'm going through this dry time. Am I even yours? And we tend to want to go back to Egypt because the cucumbers and the leeks and all those good things were there. And this manna that the Lord has given to us, this bland life. I'm just not happy. You know, what's going on? And isn't this normal for us in the temptation we face? Absolutely. But Abram learned a lesson there in Egypt. God preserved him despite himself, just like the Lord is faithful with us. Despite us, you know, it's amazing how faithful he is. He will perform what's needed within us. He will accomplish that. I thank God it's about grace because, folks, you know, it's not about my brilliance and my ability to trust God and my faith or my whatever. If it were up to that, none of the things that we see around here would be happening. I'll tell you, it's about his grace. And it's about his grace in your life, too. And so we look at Abraham as a great picture of this. But I love the fact that he went out, and one of the keys here is not knowing. How many times do we struggle with that? You know, we honestly, because of sin, we've acted independently of God, and really we want to be in control. I mean, that was essentially the temptation. You can be your own God, Eve, if you take of that fruit. So to relinquish that control of our lives, to obey the Lord, even though it doesn't make sense to us, how can I be happy obeying God? Because I think, and certainly I did, I can't do this and I can't do that, and he doesn't want me to do this. I mean, how am I going to have any fun? That's what I thought. But boy, how amazing he is. The Lord's in his right hand, the Bible says, are pleasures forevermore. And in this pleasure-seeking world, that should be a note of encouragement. You are not going to find pleasure seeking it for yourself, but you honor God, and that is the way to true happiness, the true fulfillment. Blessed are the poor in spirit. That's the beginning. To become emptied of yourself and your ambition and your plan and your agenda and what you want, and you're going to orchestrate your own little world. And unfortunately, people bring that into the church and they carve out for themselves their own little niche in the church as well. And they're not really obeying the Lord. They're not really walking by faith. They're really not. So here's the thing. This is an adventure. You know, I like adventures. Now, sometimes, you know, we want that security. But there's something also longing in us to take a step of faith, to take that venture out. Even before I was a Christian, it was just something, there was a restlessness in me that I knew I wanted more. Now, I was trying to find it in the world, and it wasn't there. Just as I graduated from high school, I decided to take my summer hitchhiking across the country. So a good friend of mine, we were going to room at Michigan State. We decided, let's go for it. So in June, we headed out from Michigan. I told my sister in Colorado, I don't know how long it'll take us to get there, but we'll call you when we get close. We got picked up by a guy in the first hour who took us all the way to her doorstep within 24 hours. And the reason he was so flexible was because he was running from the law. He had a trunk full of quarters that he ripped off from the car wash, and we took turns driving, and I got a speeding ticket on the way in Iowa, and I was afraid they were going to open that trunk. You know, it was like one of those things. It was like, what an adventure. So we get there, and then, you know, we stay there with my sisters for a while until she threw us out, and then we went on to California, and it took us another couple of days. And I'll tell you, the stories that I have, I could write a book just from my remembrances of that hitchhiking trip, because we got picked up by some wild people, and we got picked up by some amazingly sweet people. We were hitchhiking in Wyoming at midnight. This is on the way back. And we were just wanting to get back at that point. And midnight, we were taking turns hitchhiking. And a woman in her 20s picks us up. And it was kind of one of those things where she just wanted to party. And we were like, well, you know, we're kind of hungry. You know, we're two young kids. We're like, you know, this is a little too heavy for us. But she knew Evel Knievel personally. And she was telling us all these stories and ended up getting us. I mean, all these crazy things happen. Another guy picks us up, and he's siphoning gas from cars all the way from hotels, all the way. He started in, I think, Colorado, and now he's in Nebraska kind of thing. And he was a strange character, too. We met some of the nicest people. An elderly couple picked us up, took us out for breakfast, and another guy picked us up and put us up, you know, gave us breakfast, and was very suspicious. You know, we want something. You know, what's his ultimate motive? But as it turns out, he was a Christian. He was just trying to witness to us, and we kind of blew him off, you know, but I think of those adventures. Now, we like that in a sense, but the problem is when we do take an adventure, there's still that need for security. And I've discovered more and more that in our own lives, we do long for a certain aspect of boundaries. In our society, more and more, with the fatherless homes and the insecurity in life, kids are going wild, but they're afraid. They're afraid of the big world. And so what they do is they find some security in some subculture, some identity, you know, whether it be music or the hip hop culture or some sexual perverse culture or the goth, or, you know, there's all kinds of things that people can try to find an identity that, well, this is who I am. This is how I am. This is how I fit. And now here's the thing, you know, I had a real heartfelt question that came to me that really fits with this idea of Abraham and how he came out from his culture. And how we, when we're called out of the world, how does that relate to who we are and our personality? The thing I found is that the Lord doesn't give you a new personality. Your personality is unique to you. But he makes it come alive the way he intended it to be. Not bound up and not constricted by your own constrictions because you're afraid of that big wide world. And you want to, you know, you've got your little niche, your little culture that you feel comfortable with. Like, I know that was me. You know, some don't dare to be different. That's their security. They just want to conform and don't draw attention to themselves. But, you know, other people's security is being different, not being the same, and then finding their own little culture. The hippies, they got a great pleasure out of being different from the nerds and all the straight people in the world that, not straight in the sexual sense, but just, you know, stiff and old-fashioned. But the funny thing is, do you notice all the hippies looked alike? You see, even though they prided themselves on being unique and different, you know how easy it is to just, you get into that culture. And I couldn't be comfortable. You see, that was the funny thing. When I was in that culture, I couldn't be comfortable around people that were just normal. I had to be, you know, a little bit oddball because that was my security. That was my blanket. And I found my identity in that subculture. And so it is with so many things. Well, I got a heartfelt email from a goth Christian who enjoys the radio program we put out and really wanted to know whether she could recommend people that came from the goth culture here to this church. Now, that's a good question. Imagine we put that notice out, you know, welcome all goth, you know, what would happen here? But would they be welcome? I can tell you for my part, they would absolutely be welcome. But would you welcome them? Now, that's a tough one to think about because as parents, do you want that kind of influence around your kids? So those are some tough questions. And I was really wrestling with this. How do you respond to this? You love people. You want them. But at the same time, you want to disciple and train. And all of a sudden, it hit me about Abraham. It just hit me how this all comes together. You see, Abraham went out not knowing where he was going. He stepped out of his security blanket and he trusted God. And I thought, that's exactly what the Lord did for me. He made me, though I still identified with rock music and now my culture, I found Christian rock music. Listening to that old church stuff, come on, there's no way. It drove me crazy. But you know, the funny thing is, as I grew in the Lord, I realized that I didn't need to identify with just this narrow group anymore. He actually opened my horizons up. I actually could feel comfortable around people that love the old hymns, that love the old style. I could feel comfortable around all kinds of different people. And the amazing thing is, going out, trusting the Lord, I held on to my little Haran for a while like Abraham did, but eventually, you know, there was death there. It's just, it's empty to hold on to a culture because you're afraid and you're not comfortable in somebody else. So all of a sudden it hit me, you know, all the goth would be welcome in the world here. But as they would hear the word of God and as we would continue to grow, they would learn to expand their horizons. To realize that they don't have to necessarily just identify with that one culture. Now, some might be called to go back to the culture. In fact, in that website that she referred to, it was a great witness to people that are in that culture that it's not just all about death and, you know, morbidity, but there's some life there in Jesus. And who knows how God can use that. So these are some things that hit me about Abraham. Do you know, it's interesting, too, that we talk about security and we talk about what God does in people's lives. Do you know, they just came out with an interesting research study. Some 15,000 in this research. They discovered that children who are raised in a home in which the mother and father take the children to church and instill religious values in them fare so much better than kids that don't have that. The only exception is, if they argue a lot about religion in the home, then they don't do so good. They don't do that well. I thought that was a very fascinating insight. Because what that tells me, again, it's like we do need boundaries. They did some experimentation for some of the schools back in the 60s. I remember reading some things on this that really startled me, but it's true. They took all the fences. They were building this school and they didn't put actual fences around the playground area. There were no fences. And when recess would happen, all the kids would go out in the yard, but they'd all huddle in the center. They were afraid to get too close to the edges. When they put the fence around, then the kids just scattered comfortably throughout the whole yard. The fence gave them a sense of security. It's true in our lives as well. That's why it's so important to raise our children in the ways of the Lord. Give them that right and wrong. But folks, listen, there is a culture war against the traditionalists, those who believe in the traditions and the things that are handed down that are right and wrong, the basic right and wrong, and where this culture is going more and more against all kinds of rules where everything's right. Problem is, when you say everything's right, nothing is right. Something's not right in that mentality. And yet there is a hostility against those who hold traditional values. But the facts speak for themselves. When you deviate from the Word of God and the ways of God, you don't fare that well. Because God made you that way. So Abraham's a great illustration of this. Come out from your security zone. What's your security? What are you holding on to? What are you identifying with? What culture, what subculture are you really holding on to? No, that's okay. You know what? It's kind of like in the beginning, you're going to find other Christians in that same subculture and you're going to get along, you're going to have friends. But as you mature, he's going to free you from that security blanket so that you can open up your horizons to others. In this call of Abraham, essentially the big thing that had to happen was he had to die to himself. Because obedience, in a sense, is a denial of self. This is why we're called to obey. We're called to trust the Lord. And the Lord actually put some roadblocks in for his people that made it a test for their faith. For example, the Sabbath law is a great test for the people of God. They were given as a covenant, an everlasting covenant, the Sabbath day and the Sabbath year for the children of Israel. It was kind of a weird thing. 6 days you shall work. Seventh day rest. Don't do any work. Now, all the other culture, they're working 7 days a week. And how tempted you were as you're a businessman and you're watching their shops being open on the Sabbath and they're making money and they're getting ahead and you're not, what's going on? You had to trust the Lord. It didn't make sense to you. See, it was a test of their obedience. In many ways, the Lord put all these tests in front of them when he put manna out there in the wilderness for them to gather 6 days. But don't do it on the seventh day. On the sixth day, you'll find that without even trying, you have gathered twice as much. And it will last the seventh day. Where on a normal day, if you try to save it over, it would breed worms. So it was this amazing, mystical way that God was working to test their trust. And folks, that's exactly what the Lord does in our lives. He's going to test you. Are you going to believe that his way is best? While the rest of the culture is pulling you here and there, you know, are you going to exercise self-control? Fashions show more skin and more curvature. It is a challenge for men to exercise self-control. Now, of course, it's also a challenge for Christian sisters to really think about their brothers and be modest in their apparel and to be sensitive in that area. And of course, the whole motivation, there's not a matter of laws and rules. We're not putting signs in the front door with a dress code before you come in. But we want you to exercise that self-control with the motive of love. Sisters, you care for your brothers. You don't want to stumble them. At the same time, men, this is a great testing ground for you. It's a building of character. You know, this is a character developed area, and where guys end up just pleasing themselves and indulging in the flesh instead of exercising self-control, they remain perpetual babies and boys, and they never grow up. And that is a sad thing that I see. Not to be guided by feelings. Not to be led by our own lusts and our own desires. Now, again, this whole aspect of Abraham was that aspect of going out and denying himself and leaving what he was comfortable with. And it came down to obedience. That obedience required, in many ways, to leave the present security for a future promise. Now, that's what you're called to do almost every day of your life as a Christian, you know. You're denying some pleasure now in obedience to the Lord for the promise of the future. Not just the future in heaven, but also that he will be with you and will honor his word. That's exciting to see that. But more and more we live in a culture that just wants to indulge, wants to actually honor aberrant lifestyles. You know, while our nation is at war and we have all kinds of difficult issues to face, our legislature, our congressmen, our Senate, they're debating bills that are absolutely mind-boggling that they'd spend so much time crafting what to me is anti-Christian legislation. Like, for example, the 10 hours of debate they just had in the Judiciary Committee about this new law that is going to be the hate crime bill. And you know what that really is? It's about giving special rights and powers to those that have a different sexual orientation. And I'm thinking, of all the major things in this world, I can tell you, you don't see in the news, you know, where these hate crimes are out of control. In fact, it's not even on the radar for people. But there's this constant droning of this. You know, 10 hours of debate, those conservatives were trying to put in, okay, well, if we're going to give them special privileges, then we should protect the elderly and give them special, and the military and police officers and pregnant women and religious freedom. No, 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 no. Every one of those amendments was voted down because we want to give special privileges to those with a different sexual orientation. Folks, this is our nation. Now again, listen to me. I'm not putting any undue trust. And whatever laws are passed or not passed, that's going to matter in the long run because we're going down the wrong road as a nation already. But as Christians, we have to go against the flow. We see people get indoctrinated with this idea of just, well, they just want to love each other. I almost got sick watching somebody sent me a YouTube video clip of children in a New York classroom being indoctrinated of how wonderful the gay lifestyle is. Now, these are kids that can't reason for themselves. They're going to believe what they're told and how you put it. And as they were putting it in such a way like, well, you know, these two women, they love each other. And why can't they be two mommies? And why would we hate them and make it against the law that they could marry? And of course, kids at that age are so impressionable. Yeah, well, they said, okay, you kids, you be the judge. You know, what would you say is right? And all the kids are saying, well, they feel this way. They should have the right for this. And of course, a lot of adults have that same naivete in regard to looking at this. But you know, the funny thing is, you could get a spokesman up in front of those 5, 6, 7-year-olds and say this as well. You could say, you know, this person just murdered this other person, but you know, do you know what their story is? That poor person was abused as a child and he was trying to work out his anger issues and he got upset and he hurt this other person, but do we want to ruin his life forever now and send him to jail and give him a... You could talk kids into anything. And that's what's scary about that kind of indoctrination. Poor boy, you know, he doesn't have any nice new toys and he saw something shiny in the store and, you know, is it wrong for us to withhold that from him and punish him deeply because he was crying to himself at night and he didn't get that toy and so he went and took it and he knows it was wrong, but should we punish? And you could convince kids of any sentimental thing. Why am I bringing this up? Well, this is the world we live in and we are so tempted to go along with the Canaanite culture. Abraham was there too. When he got into the land of Canaan, we find out here, by faith, verse 9, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. See, this obedience to leave pleasure now for a future promise. When we deny ourselves, when we deny a present gratification in lieu of the future promise, it fares much better for us. But our generation, they want it now. Young people, they go into a home with a couple who've been married for 30, 40 years. They see all the nice things and they want it now. And they have the credit cards and they get all the debt and they get into trouble because they want it now. They can't wait. They can't live with early garage sale decor. And that's how we lived in when we got married. It was early garage sale. In fact, my wife and I were looking around at our house and we only can find about 4 or 5 pieces of furniture that we've actually bought new over the 26, 27 years of marriage. Because you know what? After a while, you realize you can find good deals out there and you don't have to get the best and you can be content with this. And you know what? I'll tell you, there's a key for people, but unfortunately, we're not there. Now, Abraham's a perfect example of that. He's denying himself present, living in tents, dwelling as in a foreign country, not getting comfortable. Why? Verse 10, it tells us, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He had his eye on what the Lord was going to give him. He was a wanderer. He was a sojourner in the earth. And guess what the Bible tells you? As a believer, that's what you are. You're a sojourner. This world is not your home anymore when you're his. You're just passing through. Don't get caught up in the Canaanite culture. The Canaanites do some pretty bad things. The sexual practices of the Canaanites are outlandish. And all of the sexual stimulation leads to unwanted pregnancies. And so they have the way to get rid of all the babies. They offer them up to Molech and fry them on these little molten hot idols in the fire. They called it passing the kids through the fire. And they worship the god of pleasure that way. They worship Baals. They worship the Ashtaroths. It was a free-for-all, the pagan culture. No rules. Free love, free sex, no rules. Whatever you feel like, it's there. Whatever pleasure you can imagine. And we're told, you know what? Come out from among them. This should not be you anymore. This should not be your life. And if you make it your life, you're going to end up miserable, empty, because God created you differently. When you honor God and you deny instant gratification and you control yourself, oh, the joy of marital happiness and bliss is amazing. Fewer and fewer are remaining faithful in those areas. But he was content to wait. He didn't even own so much as an acre of land in the land of Canaan. The only place he ended up buying was a place to bury Sarai when she finally died. But he was dwelling in a strange land, and we're dwelling in a strange land. You know, and I have to watch my own heart, because as I live in this culture, it's so easy to get caught up in it myself. I'll watch a news program, and then I'll watch a sports thing, and then I'll click over to some show, and pretty soon I'm watching some show, American Idolatry, or something like that. Or then, I'm being facetious because I do watch it, I confess, you know, to my shame. But I find, you know, that after I watch it, it's like time. It's time that I can't return. And then, you know, there's other shows that are real popular. You know, that show was 29, 27. Oh, you watch it. Oh, okay. Now I know a little more about you. Teasing here. Point is, those are mild examples, but you know what? It just shows you how much more time we spend and just living in this world and getting comfortable here in this. We are modeling for our children what is important in the world. That is the scary thing. That's the thing that really concerns me the most. Because they're not seeing us climb mountains. They're not seeing us with a vision and a goal and a plan and a life that's not living unto oneself. Like that one man who had the very, very wealthy friends, part of the Boston Blue Blood. And he noticed his friends weren't corrupt by all. How does all that wealth and power not corrupt you? And he says, because our parents taught us everything we have is either an idol or it's a tool to be used by the Lord. If it's not going to be used by the Lord and it's not a tool, it's going to be an idol. And we have to watch our own heart. Little children, John says, guard yourself from idols. This is Abraham's dilemma, and that's why he dwelt as a stranger. He did not get comfortable in that culture. It must have vexed his soul. Certainly, it will indoctrinate your soul over time. It'll grow on you. So waiting for the city to come. And you know what? We wait. Like the farmer, we plants a seed and he waits. He does the work to keep the fertilization and the weeds down. And that plant grows. And eventually it brings forth fruit. But it comes from work. And Abraham was given this amazing promise, but it required him to take a step of faith. And we too wait. 1 Peter chapter 1 verse 4 says, we have an inheritance incorruptible, an undefiled that does not fade away, reserved in heaven. Do you know how soon it will be? The last 27 years of marriage have gone by so quickly. 22 years of being out here in New Jersey. You people have not fully corrupted me yet. No, I actually enjoy it so much out here. It drives me crazy going back to California, actually. But I'll tell you what, it's like I see how fast time goes. I've got a little grandson. I mean, my daughter was that age just a little bit more when we first moved out here. I still remember her running around the little apartments there in Parkwood Village, you know, picking dandelions. And I still got that picture of cute little puffy cheeks and her blonde hair. And now she's a mother raising little Riley Nathan. And boy, what a cutie he is. Let me show you some pictures. No, I'm just... But how time goes so fast. Time is moving. And we're waiting. You know, I'm blessed with every spiritual blessing, the Bible says, and you too. But do we put stock in that, or do we long for the things in this world more and more? And that's unfortunate. I know the world around me indulges. They see something, they want it. They want to drink. They want to experiment sexually. They do shady business deals, cutting the corners. And you know what? It's so tempting. It appeals to my flesh. I get ahead. I can gratify a pleasure. But I got to remember who I am. James says to the church in chapter 4, verse 4, he says, "Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." Don't get too close to the world. See yourself as dwelling in tents, tent making. That's what I believe your job should be. Whatever you do, whatever career you have, it should be your tent making. Like Paul the Apostle, when he went into a city, he made tents. That was his living. So he could provide for himself so that he could minister to the people of God. So his job was just, it was to cover his base, to provide for his needs, so that he could be useful for God's kingdom. Whatever your career is, consider it as a believer, as a disciple, it's tent making. It's just, you're paying the bills, you know, God has given you a gift to be successful and make a lot of money, great. You ought all the more to be investing in the people of God, investing in the kingdom. Not building bigger and better barns, which eventually one day you're going to get the end of your life. You're going to have a lot of vain regrets on how much you spent on self. Our citizenship is in heaven. And you know, notice here, it says Sarah shares the same faith. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. And she bore a child when she was past the age because she judged him faithful who had promised. Now, Abraham had a very difficult challenge to come out of Ur of the Chaldees. Sarah had a challenge to even go outside of the reason. She's 90 years old. She's already went through menopause. She's already went through the period where she can't have children anymore. Abraham, her husband, is 99 years old. They're aged. But they have a child. Now, I want to tell you something about Isaac. In the Bible, he's called the child of promise. And you know, there's the choice you're going to make within your life. You are either going to have a child of promise, or you're going to have the alternative, which when you read in how gracious God is here in the record of faith, doesn't mention the weakness that Sarah had. Because essentially when Abraham was told that he was going to have a son, and he waited and waited and waited, "I'm going to make your name great, you're going to have many descendants." He's getting older and older, and time's going on, years, months are turning into years, years into decades, and now he's in his 70s, he's in his 80s. "God, I have no child." But the Lord promised. So he held on, but Sarah, she had another idea. Maybe we're supposed to help God. You know, God helps those who help themselves. Isn't that in the Bible somewhere? You've heard people say that, haven't you? It's not in the Bible. But isn't the concept in the Bible, you know, yeah, well, you're to bear your own burden, sure. You're to work hard, yeah. But Abraham listened to his wife. His wife said, "You know, why don't you have this surrogate mother thing kind of thing? I'll give you my maid, Hagar. You go into her. I'll be right with you. So if she conceives that night, I will be like right there and it'll be like my child." Abraham didn't argue. Went into her. She got pregnant and Ishmael was born. The child of the bondwoman. The child of the slave in the family. The maid. And he was not the child of the promise. So he's now 12 years old and the Lord comes to Abraham and says, "I'm going to give you a son." He goes, "Lord, let Ishmael live before you." "No, I'm going to give you a son through Sarah, your wife." He was blown away at this thought. Well, when the Lord was giving him this promise, Abraham laughed to himself. "Could it even happen that I'd have such pleasure as an old man?" And then when Sarah heard it, she laughed as well when the angel was telling Abraham, "By this time next year, your wife's going to have a child." And she's listening to the door. "See, who are these strange people? I'm going to check this out." She's eavesdropping and she hears that and she laughs to herself quietly. She's like, "Yeah, sure." And the angel says, "Why did you laugh, Sarah?" "He heard me. I didn't laugh out loud. I didn't laugh." "Oh, yes, but you did laugh. but the Lord will show you. And you know what? They ended up giving that child the name of Isaac, which means laughter, when she finally had that child. A child of promise. And in a sense, here's the choice that we make. Do we love our Ishmaels more than our Isaacs? Or do we Isaac our Isaacs? That is, do we delight in our Isaacs? Of what God has promised. Here's the challenge. I am tempted as a man to enjoy my Ishmaels much more. What I produce, what I do, look what I did, look what, you know, sometimes people say, wow, you've done a marvelous job here at Calvary Chapel. Yeah, right. I'm just being what God's called me to be. He's done the work. It's His work. It's His church. He's built the church. I haven't built the church. But my flesh would like to take a little credit somewhere along the line. I'd like to glory in my Ishmael. But I'll tell you what, when you glory in your Ishmael, it's like it comes to nothing. Ishmael amounted to nothing. In fact, that deviation from God's plan, we're paying the price right now. Because the descendants of Ishmael, the Arab world, and Muslim largely, is in hostility against the children of Isaac, the Jewish people. And we are now seeing the resulting dilemma, this hostility over 35 acres of land. World War III is about to happen. 35 acres of land, yes, there in the Temple Mount. That's what it's all centering down to, and it's what it's going to come down to. Of course, it's all part of God's plan. But do I love my Ishmaels more? I don't want to waste time on Ishmael. I want to trust in what God has provided. I want to live in such a way that I'm putting all my delight in the promises of God. One pastor put it this way at the pastor's conference in Appleton. I just was there sharing and listening to some good guys and just enjoying the fellowship there. But he said it this way, and I love it. He says, live in such a way that when you die, the devil throws a party. He's so glad to get rid of you because of the trouble you've caused his kingdom of darkness. Because you shine so much light by your life. You shine so much joy. The fruits of the Spirit were so apparent that people right and left were wanting to know about your God. Where do you go to church? I would love to go to church with you. Because they see your life. They see your joy. They see your countenance. They see your self-denial. They see your selflessness. You know, this is what people are longing for. And when you shine a little bit of that light, walking in the promise, instead of indulging your flesh, generous, giving, helping, encouraging, living for others. Tell you what, you've not only found your life, but you've shined your light in such a way that when eventually the Lord brings you home, you're going to have great reward because you've yielded it up to Him. But more than that, the devil will be so happy you're gone. But that's okay, because you've left spiritual children all around you. You've impacted, you've influenced others to trust in your God. I tell you, there's no greater reward than to see your children walking in truth. Not just your physical children, but your spiritual children. I get such a kick out of when I hear people come to the Lord. That's great. I'm excited. You know, that's awesome. But what really excites me is when I see them growing in the Lord. And then they start serving. And then they start getting a call. And next thing you know, they're called to go into as a mission field or something. Or maybe in your own job and career. They're just a witness. One of the guys that had the greatest influence on me in college wasn't a pastor. He was a professor. He was an orthopedic doctor and a professor at Michigan State University, Dr. Fred Tinning. Great guy. He's an elderly man now. Yeah, but he influenced me to want to make his God my God. Because of his life, the joy, the power that was there, I want to be like him. And that's what you can leave. You can leave a legacy. Just like Abraham left, and the children of Abraham are like the stars of the sky, it says here. Now, he says, therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born many. In verse 13, he says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed them, and that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. They looked at them afar off, they believed that, and they realize they're strangers. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they'd called to mind that country from which they'd come out, they would have had opportunity to return. You know, if you think about it, if you call to mind, if you start thinking of the past and, oh man, how good it was back then. And we sat around, had some brews, and man, you know, it's kind of tough right now following the Lord. And you can call to mind that and you can go back. If that's what you want. If he'd wanted that, he could have went back. But he says, but now they desire a better, that is a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, and he has prepared a city for them. And by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, who had received the promises, and offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. And that is the key. In Isaac is where the blessing is going to come. In the child of promise, which is what the whole book of Hebrews is about, it's what God has done for you by sending his own son to die in your place. And Isaac is a type of Christ in that when he was offered up, the Lord preserved him. In Jesus' case, he was crucified, but he was resurrected. And through that promise of the Messiah, we have eternal life. Not through Ishmael. Not through our labor, not through our work, not through our ability, but through the promise of what God has done for us. And that's why being a Christian is such a delight. It can be delighting in your delight. Delighting, Isaacing in your Isaac. Rejoicing, laughing in your laughter because of who the Lord is.